Hello, everyone, and welcome to day 5 of the Fair Digital Finance Forum. I'd like to welcome everyone that's joining us live today, this morning, this afternoon, or evening, wherever you're joining in from, and those that are catching up on demand after the session. Just whilst we're waiting for everyone to join, please feel free to introduce yourself in the chat function, which is at the bottom of your screen. You can let us know who you are, your organization, and where in the world you're joining us from. Then during the session, we'd really like you to put in any comments that you have for our panelists or anything that comes up during the discussion. So please use that chat function throughout the discussion. You can also submit your questions to the panelists using that Q&A function at the bottom of your screen. Perfect. So I want to start by introducing this session. It's the Next Generation Consumers and Finance of the Future. So this is going to be beginning the final day of this week-long forum. We've had 15 amazing sessions throughout the week. We've had 4 days of activities so far, and we still have today, which is 3 more sessions. We've had incredible conversations, which have brought together voices from civil society, businesses, and also from governments. And through these discussions, we've really been able to explore how to harness the potential of digital finance for all consumers across the world, really ensuring that consumer protection and empowerment are at the center of future business models and the new regulation that will be put in place. So we started this week on Monday with the release of our consumer vision for Fair Digital Finance, which puts forward the core pillars of consumer-centered digital finance. And then on Monday, we launched the Fair Digital Finance Accelerator. This is a new 3-year program which aims to strengthen the voice of underrepresented consumers in digital finance policymaking and product design. And then last but not least, we had on Wednesday the hugely successful release of a global consumer statement on Buy Now, Pay Later, which has been endorsed by consumer advocates all across the world. And Patrick from Choice, who's been leading on this from Australia, has just told us that we've already had over 9,000 signatures on that statement. And so, yes, as I said, we still have another 2 sessions this afternoon, so please do register for those. But without further ado, I'll introduce our moderator for today's session. So moderating this session will be Sandra Wolacek. Sandra is the platform curator for the Blockchain and Digital Assets Platform at the World Economic Forum. Sandra's work focuses on governance and ESG elements of blockchain technology and digital currencies. And prior to that, Sandra worked at the World Bank in the Treasury, focusing on capital markets and how innovation and blockchain technology can be used to promote development. So Sandra joins us with a wealth of knowledge and experience, and I will pass it over to you, Sandra.
Thank you so much, Thea. Thank you for the kind introduction. Very happy to be here for this session. I'm really excited to have these panelists here today to discuss the next generation of consumers and the finance of the future. It's a really interesting time. 70% of young people have online access, but less than 50% of those have access to a basic bank account. So, yeah, the young people are digital natives. They have a lot of access to the internet, to various financial tools. However, we need to ensure that we're able to keep them safe and keep all the consumers protected. So I'm really excited to have the panelists here today that are going to discuss the various aspects that have been touched on throughout the week. That includes inclusivity, safety, data protection and privacy, and sustainability for digital finance. And all of these panelists that we have are the next generation leaders. Let me go one by one and introduce them. So we have Vedavati from MGP in Mumbai, and she focuses on challenges in the medical and pharma sector. We have Patrick Bray, who is from Choice in Australia, and he's focused on consumer finance issues in his work. We have David Shear from Euro consumers in Belgium, and he's focused on digital issues and sustainability. And we have Vinash Singh from the Consumer Council of Fiji, who's focused on educating consumers and ensuring that the young consumers and overall everybody is educated in this area. So with that, I'll get started on the session. We have a lot of interesting aspects to discuss from these young leaders and understanding how we can harness everything that we know today and bring it towards the future, and how all of these next generation leaders can inform the policies that are being created today. For our first question, what do you see as the key challenges for young consumers in the digital finance services? I can begin, anybody can jump in, or if you wanna go down the line, I'll let you all.
Yeah, I'm happy to jump in. It's Patrick from the Consumer Group Choice. I think an issue that Australians, young people in Australia really face is, you know, almost every young person has access to a smartphone. Almost all banking is now done online. Reflecting on the amount of times that, you know, a person in their 20s would go inside a physical bank branch, it would be, you know, once every few years if your grandma gave you a check or there was some form of scam. So now banking is done so often on your phone. You know, at the touch of a, you know, a fingertip, you can invest, you can get into large amounts of debt with not many checks. And so there's a lot more freedom and innovation in the market. But what consumer advocates are really seeing on the ground is there's not a really commensurate increase in consumer protections. One such example, which was alluded to, is in the buy now, pay later space. We're seeing more and more harms developing in young people because these providers are targeting young people with these small loans that stack up. And very often these loans happen in constellations. You know, providers say, you know, they might only have one loan. But what we're seeing more and more is that people have, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 different buy now, pay later debts. And what we've also seen is that, you know, these debts come in constellations for young people. And new research coming out of the UK is saying that about 50% of buy now, pay later loans are put straight back onto a credit card. So for young people, it's really tricky navigating it. There's all very slick marketing, but there really aren't the same level of protections, and it's kind of concerning.
Yeah, I might also jump in to echo what Patrick has been saying. I think that, as you said, Sandra, young people are indeed digitally native, and they are very much, pretty much constantly in contact with a smartphone, their laptops, and so they feel very much at ease in the digital world. But this also creates a few problems, because the fact that they think they're so at ease might also make them, let's say, more prone to being targeted for scams and frauds of all kinds. This is something that we see in Belgium. There's a big issue with phishing right now and with scamming. We see a massive increase in complaints related to this. And a large part comes from younger people, because they go on like all kinds of social media apps, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, where they're actually a prime target for many fraudsters and scammers. And they're being pushed sometimes through very elaborate schemes, like with deep fakes of Belgian celebrities to buy into shady cryptocurrencies or other financial products, pyramid schemes. I even had a friend recently who contacted me for, you know, to ask me to send 400 euros and I would get 8,000 back, and he seemed to really believe it. But this is a major issue, and it's everywhere. It comes from all kinds of places. And I think it'll be a big challenge right now. In Europe, we're trying to regulate big digital players. And I think adding many protections for consumers, young and old, to be more protected from these scams will be a major issue.
Hi, I would like to add to David's point, expanding on the David's take of protection and phishing and young consumers falling prey to all these kinds of frauds. I have two concerns, one of which is the data protection itself. because since we are still, many of the countries, the youth are still getting acquainted with the technology and how to use the digital finance and have very little information about it and very little information about the SOPs of how to handle a digital finance tool or a platform. That makes them very much vulnerable to all these kinds of frauds and phishing, where the misinformation is provided very, with very conviction, so that the misinformed or the half-informed consumer would obviously go and believe that information about their own digital space. So that's one concern. And I think the another concern is, what is the cause of this misinformation or the phishing or the data protection issues and awareness? So when we are focused on the digital finance space, so I think the major issue is the clear information that the consumers need to get. And for that, as the next gen leaders, I think we need to promote the awareness about the digital finance system, about the about how the system works. Let's take a very simple example. If I don't know what details I have to provide and what details are my private details, so this is the cause when I become much more vulnerable to whoever asks me for any of the simple details, let's say bank account, or the most vulnerable detail is your CVV number on the credit card. So that's what happens when I am misinformed or I am half informed, and I give access to someone who is just a bit smarter, just to make me maybe pay for what I have not bought or for what I have not purchased. So it is very easy to target such people. So the data protection and the privacy and protecting young consumers from phishing and frauds goes hand in hand with informing them and making them aware. So I think that's the matter of concern for me.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's so great to hear those answers. I think that there's a false sense of security that we get as the next generation, as these young consumers, and because we're so comfortable with using our devices and all of those applications, there we do fall vulnerable to those kinds of challenges that you all described. So one of my favorite things about the panelists here that we have is the diversity of perspectives. We have so many different countries represented here, and depending on the country context and the regional context, the way that we approach consumer protection is very different. So each of these young leaders in their respective countries will have a different approach and a different way that they need to address the challenges that exist in their region or in their context. So my next question is going to be on in your specific region, when you focus on the progress to being made to address those challenges, what are the ways that you can strive to improve on those challenges from a regional perspective?
I'm also happy to kick off. I think I'm a finance campaigning advocate, and a lot of the work that Choice does is to push for fairer finance laws. And it's one of those situations where you often push for a new law and new protections, and then suddenly a new industry emerges, which is unregulated. And so what we always try and do is push for broad principles-based laws that capture all conduct in financial services. And as I mentioned, Buy Now Pay Later is a perfect example where that loophole exists in digital finance. I think we might come to it later, but I think there's areas of cryptocurrency that is shocking by the lack of regulation and lack of consumer protection. So I think, you know, when we cast our eye of advocacy and how we want to help consumers, we see, you know, who's getting harmed, are they experiencing vulnerability, and, you know, where are the gaps in the law? And, you know, as far as we've pushed across the consumer movement in Australia and around the world, you know, financial services providers are incentivized to skirt around the laws and to skip laws so that they can maximize their profit motive. And so it's always about getting the balance of a competitive environment, because competition is good and markets, you know, are really effective at achieving good outcomes, but ensuring that there's good consumer protection. So that's the way that we view it and the way that we kind of pursue change and advocacy in Australia.
I can continue in the same order as well. Yeah, I think we also have a similar approach. We try and in Belgium, we try and look at it from three main angles. Also in terms of who we're targeting with our campaigns. And in first instance, we try for safety of financial services, we try to reach out to the banks and to financial institutions and to all the major players to try and ask them to, for instance, improve their safety procedures. It's still quite lacking in Belgium compared to other European countries. So what we're pushing for right now is to ask banks to increase the use of two-factor authentication procedures and to actually make them obligatory. So right now, the victims of phishing, they don't really notice that they've been phished until it's too late. And that's why, you know, basic security procedures that are being used in many, many places like two-factor authentication should also be expanded to banking apps. And so that when you make an easy transfer to whatever accounts it is you're transferring to, the app would also send you like a text message or would ask you to open an authenticating device just to confirm that you are actually trying to send X amount of money to this person. So this is one part of what we're doing. We're going to the banks and we're asking them to change their practices to better protect consumers. Another part of who we're targeting, or another group that we're trying to engage with, are of course policymakers. And we also ask them, of course, to put these required safety measures into law. And there as well, we've had some success lately with the Belgian Parliament, because there we were campaigning to ask them to introduce a new measure in a new law on digital finance. And this measure would actually ask banks to verify the transfers that are being made over their networks. For instance, in many countries, and I think in the UK it's already the case, when you make a transfer with your banking app, you need to give in the beneficiary's name as well as the bank account. And then the bank is forced to check before the transfer is being made if the name of the beneficiary actually corresponds to the person or the entity who owns this bank account. This is not the case in Belgium right now. So you can just make a transfer, put in the wrong name, and it will still arrive, no questions asked. And so this is something that is currently under discussion in Parliament, which we're quite proud of. And then just to finish, the third element, of course, we need to, or the third approach is just general increase of awareness and education. So there as well, we need to ensure that schools already teach from a young age basic principles of cybersecurity. And we're also trying, of course, to reach out to consumers by giving them booklets that have been made in accordance with cybersecurity experts on also basic safety measures. We've also recently partnered up with Google to co-create an online game, which is called Space Shelter. And it's quite fun, actually, and it's made for younger people, kids mostly, and teaches them actually how to make a good password, how to ensure they're not being scammed. And so this kind of gamification awareness initiatives can also be helpful, I think.
And just following on from that about scams, what's really interesting that happened today in Australia is the competition regulator, the ACCC, are taking Facebook to court about cryptocurrency scams. It's the first of its kind in Australia, in the world, sorry, where Facebook knowingly promoted scams with famous Australians into cryptocurrency. So it's a really good model for future regulation. And hopefully, you know, that succeeds. It's a pretty strong case that, you know, Facebook have an obligation. They profit off consumers' data, that they actually have to ensure that consumers are looked after and not scammed.
Thank you for those examples and for those the regulation that's being developed and those interesting tools used for educating consumers. Vedavati, did you have something to add on that?
Yes, sure. Thanks, Sandra. So as far as the South Asian region is concerned, even the AFI survey, that is the Alliance for Financial Inclusion survey in, I guess, 2021, it said that South Asian countries are still struggling with the inclusion in the digital finance section. So as far as the youth is concerned, we are still getting acquainted, as I said earlier as well. So it is very important to be informed, to be protected. So before we are informed, we need to be protected by someone other, because since I don't know how to protect myself, I have to take help of someone, some regulatory body, some authority or something. So as far as India is concerned, sticking to the regulations of the GDPR, that is the Global Data Protection Regulation, that has come, I guess, a couple of years ago. So sticking to that, we have already in the process to develop our own country framework or our own nationwide framework. And also we are part of some global organizations. Then we co-chair the GPFI, that is Global Partnership for Financial Inclusion, along with the UK and Indonesia, who are chairing the GPFI. So on the international scale, India is involving with, and we can say, taking help from those who have already formulated their regulations. And as far as the internal national awareness and inclusion is concerned, we are doing efforts to include such topics right from the school education, because that's where a child needs to learn about all the financial transactions that you're going to do in future as a consumer. So if it is it's a very simple psychological thing that if it's taught in your childhood, you're never going to forget it. So we are including this protection, you can say regulations or guidelines, in our school curriculums nationwide, so that automatically, just like you know how to dress up and get out of the house, similarly, you know what rules to follow, what guidelines to follow while doing your online transactions. So, and also we are promoting various online investing platforms, various, because since we are still evolving in the digital space, we only know how to use some e-wallets. And that is, but that is not the whole and soul digital finance sector. So we are still a bit skeptical about the investment part, when it comes to investment part, or when it comes to actual online banking. Everyone still feels that it's a risk to do, you know, greater amount transactions online. So we are still developing the mindset of people that it's safe, it's secure if you are going to be your own regulator. So involving everyone, then promoting digital finance among the youth and among the children is what our focus is right now. So there are various guidelines, various programs have been made to promote digital finance.
Thank you, Viravari. I mean, having kids have that in their curriculum early on, and being able to know the ways to remain aware and informed from early on is really helpful. I see that we have Vinesh here. So Vinesh is joining us from the Consumer Council of Fiji, and also bringing a very interesting perspective to our panel. So I'd love to hear in Fiji the challenges and the ways that you all are addressing those challenges that you're facing today.
Thank you, Sandra. So I'll dive right into it. So some of the challenges which I'll be focusing on, especially on issues surrounding financial inclusion in Fiji, as well as some of the barriers young consumers they're facing in accessing digital financial services. So in Fiji, you know, while there's been, you know, a lot of transformation in the way consumers transact over the last few years, which is towards DFA, especially exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, there's still a lot of challenges, which actually are the barriers as well, which prevents or discourages consumers from accessing or using DFS or digital financial services. While some of the barriers, they are unique to Fiji, there's also a lot of challenges or barriers which are present in other parts of the world as well. So in terms of digital financial inclusion, I just wanted to focus on two things. The first one is the widely dispersed geographical areas. Because we have over 300 islands dispersed across, a wide area, there's a lot of areas or a lot of islands which are isolated from the urbanized areas. So here in these areas, the consumers are often left behind in terms of connectivity, So these consumers, isolation places them at a disadvantage compared to the consumers in other urban areas, so making them unreachable and unbanked. So there's great need for inclusion in this particular area. Another one is the digital financial services. It is relatively new to consumers here, and we saw a huge uptake of DFS platforms such as mobile money during the COVID-19 pandemic, especially because it was used as a platform to disperse the government grants. So all the financial assistance which was delivered by the government was done through DFS, such as mobile money wallets. However, we saw that there were certain segments of consumers, especially the elderly, who were not familiar with DFS usage. Hence, they ended up losing considerable portion of their government assistance because of the reason they didn't know how to use it. And because of that, they faced unfair trading practices as well. So therefore, in regards to financial inclusion, so we can say there are two major issues: geography isolated consumers and certain segments of consumers, maybe the early or the non-tech-savvy consumers who are left behind. So, some of the barriers which young consumers, I wanted to share this as well, which face here in small island developing states, include maybe compared to older generations. But evidence in Fiji suggests that they are the also segment of consumer groups who actually easily fall victims to scams. So cybersecurity becomes an issue. Another very major one is interoperability. So young consumers, because they are very tech savvy, they would like to engage in transactions through DFS, but because of the lack of interoperability in Fiji between different systems, that becomes an issue. For example, if I want to use my mobile money wallet, but it is not synced to the systems of banks or other platforms that I'll be directly able to transfer cash from my online banking platform, my bank, to mobile money wallet. So there's lack of interoperability between different systems. That has become a major issue. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you so much for sharing that perspective. It's so interesting to hear how everybody's approaching it in their various regions and countries. So with that, I think we have a lot of power as young consumers to influence change. So how are you all approaching digital finance and using it as a tool for change in the future? I'll maybe start back with Patrick again.
Yeah. I've been reflecting on, the power of digital finance. And I was chatting with my 25-year-old housemate last night over dinner, and he was saying he invests in Bitcoin, and it takes him all of 2 minutes to set up an account, to invest, and, all of 2 minutes to sell. And I think there's been such a massive improvement in innovation in digital finance. Like if one were to consider trading stocks in the 1970s, you'd have to get a stockbroker, you'd have to call or email someone, or take many days, it could even take a week, the fees, there'd be commissions. Now it's all in the palm of your hands. And I think that's, a testament to innovation, but on the other side of the coin, there are so many harms and dangers that we see. So you know, crypto itself and online trading, there's a lot of volatility, there's a lot of scams, there's a lot of risk. There's a whole lot of consumer confusion. If you were to ask 100 people in the street, you know, how many would actually know the operations of that market? So there's this constant tension for young people where there's innovation and there's change and improvements, but there's also risks and lack of consumer protections. So that's something that, you know, as a consumer group in Australia, we're really thinking about. On a practical example, you know, we are now using, you know, different platforms to help people make decisions. It's not exactly digital finance, but one great example that Choice did a few years ago was around free range eggs. So, you know, there's a lot of confusion around whether eggs are, you know, free range or not, and there's a lot of labeling errors, and we developed an app where people could scan the barcode and work out exactly whether the eggs that you were purchasing were from free range eggs and not caged or farmed eggs. And there's all these little examples of innovations through apps like that, which I think is really powerful. But there's that constant tension that we're dealing with, is improving competition in the market, ensuring that there's new products, you know, new ways to trade and to make money, but just to ensure that there are consumer protections. And, you know, I think I'm harking on, but it's just something that we really see as really important. And I think in many respects, like this kind of digital and online trading and the need for young people to kind of invest their money is really some kind of challenge against intergenerational wealth disparity. In a lot of countries like America, UK, Australia, you know, as a young person, the possibility of owning a house is really difficult. Inflation is rising considerably. Wages are decreasing. You know, we're all seeing our parents and grandparents' generation sitting on a lot of wealth. And I think the young people, they want to do something about it, and they see these new markets. Oh, why don't I invest in, you know, Ethereum or, you know, Dogecoin or whatever the new fad is. But it's this kind of grasping or grappling at, you know, some form of reclaiming this intergenerational inequality. And it's hard to grasp what it is, but I think I'm seeing it more and more amongst young people in Australia.
That's so interesting. And you're bringing in a lot of use cases here. A lot of these are definitely some new innovations and new technologies, but the challenges have existed for so long. They're wrapped in a different way. And so young consumers maybe don't realize the challenges that are associated with them, but historically they're falling into the same traps. So it's good to remain aware and having you all as leaders to maintain that awareness. So I'll just move on to David, if you could provide your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I'd like to jump back to what Patrick was saying. He was making a lot of very interesting points. And in terms of like young consumers engaging with digital financial products, I think what was really telling was the whole GameStop saga that took place, I think, a bit more than a year ago or last year, where we also saw that a lot of young consumers, it was also related to the fact that many people had gotten these stimulus checks from the American government. Well, they were just, yeah, they jumped on a bandwagon that was also carrying these messages of young people being excluded from wealth. And they just, well, did something very strange, which was, you know, buy massively this stock from a company that was all but dead. And I think it's telling, and you can also see it here in Belgium, of course, young people are investing in cryptocurrencies, and when they make a lot of money, they brag about it. But of course, when they don't, you never see those posts on social media. We have a lot of like posts by Belgian or European influencers that, you know, they step out of a big shiny German car and they say, ha, you know, do you want to be rich like me? Well, follow my tips and buy into all these weird cryptocurrencies. But you never see the video of the person who lost all his savings or her savings after doing exactly what was told in one of these videos. And so I think it's up to, you know, us young consumers, but also us consumer organizations, to step into this field of social media and other places where these scams or these fraudulent advices are being given, and to either engage with influencers who wanna, you know, make efforts to fight these scams and these bad practices, but also ourselves, you know, up our awareness increase our reach and really, yeah, do what we're doing, advocate for fairer and safer digital finance. So I think that's quite important. And just to finish as well, I think Patrick touched on something very much broader, but there is indeed the issue that young people now don't have it easy when they want to buy houses or try and follow the same life path as their parents did or their grandparents did. People have to live in rental apartments much longer. They can save a lot less. Their money is worth less than it was before. But that is, I think, a much broader topic that also needs to be tackled. Where we as consumer organizations have a role to play, but it's much, much, much larger than that.
And I'll just add one other thing that's kind of been on my mind a little bit, and that's around the role of consumer education versus law reform. And, you know, I think education has a really important role to play, but in the end, it's easier to change the conduct of 30 big companies than it is to change the minds of, you know, 300 million young people. I think it places too much onus on young people to kind of navigate a really complex system, and the onus should be on companies actually doing the right thing. And I think that's a really important shift. I think education has an, you know, important role to play growing up, but fundamentally when products are complex, there should be an onus on industry itself rather than consumers facing the burden there, because it's just getting increasingly more confusing and more young people are getting harmed.
Yeah, thank you. I think David brought up a great point that, you know, usually in cases where there are problems that come up, influencers are not talking about losing all their money. So it's up to the consumer advocates to really shine a light on those problems and challenges and ensure that people are aware and educated and have that literacy. Vedavadi, did you have something to add on this point?
Yes. Thanks, Sandra. I just wanted to make one important point where I think the digital finance sector, whole of the platform and the system, I think it will help the young consumers to make more informed decisions about their own expenditure. So since I'm a professor, I like to expand on everything in a very simple and example point of view. So let's take a simple example. When I was not in the digital space, let's say I'm not spending digitally, then when I spend with bills and currency directly in hard cash, automatically my expenditure is unaccounted many of the times, and automatically I go, you can say when it's the end of the month, automatically I'm always broke. But when I come to the digital platform or the digital systems, automatically it keeps a check on how much I spend. I can set some limits on my expenditure, not only you know, looking at how much expenditure I'm doing, but actually in a digital setting, I can actually limit my expenditure. I can actually put a setting which does not allow me to spend more than what my budget was. So it's a very, very small thing. It's a very small observation, but I think this will make the young consumers keep a check on their regular expenditure, make informed decisions that, do I really have to buy this or not? Does it really worth it or not? And if the whatever product I'm buying, is it really justifying its amount or not? So when we go digital, it automatically creates our own footprints. It automatically creates our own record of the expenditure, which might make us think that our line of expenditure, whether it's justified or not, then we will automatically go on thinking on every single thing, every single aspect, like, really, I really spend this much for this many products? Is it really necessary? And are the products worth it? So what I think is the very small change in our daily habits, but it could lead to a big change. So automatically it will lead to a responsible consumption, and automatically it will save my money, so that I would go with Patrick and David's approach on investment. So for investment, I need to have money, right? I cannot go broke at the end of the month. So automatically the whole circle of expenditure and savings will fall in line, I think so. Thanks, Sandra.
Thank you, Vidavati. And Vinesh, we'll go to you before we go to the Q&A. There are a lot of good questions coming into the chat, so feel free to continue posting those and we'll get to them shortly. Vinesh, your final word on this last question here.
Thank you, Sandra. So yes, I agree with Patrick and David what they shared about investment and scams, investment in cryptocurrency as well, because it also was quite prevalent in the Pacific, including the Fiji as well. So much so that because Fiji, you know, and DFS was relatively developing Fiji, and we did not have enough policies in place in order to protect consumers. So what happened is what the central bank did was, and which is currently being practiced, is that investment in any cryptocurrency country in Fiji is illegal. So people can't actually invest in cryptocurrency in Fiji because of the issue surrounding it. So I think it's really, really important. The main tool here is advocacy, but not advocacy on a consumer level. So we need to target in three different areas. That is advocacy on policy level, industry level, as well as individual level. So because policymakers also need to be aware of the issues which are currently existing and what actions we are proposing in order to protect consumers, we also need to advocacy at industry level so that the industry players are there, that is MNOs, there are banks, and other service providers, they are also aware of these issues and they are working hand in hand together with consumer advocacy groups and policymakers in order to develop systems to protect consumers as well. And consumers also have a responsibility in this area, so we also need advocacy at individual level as well. That's why we come in as well, so that we can educate consumers on this particular issue so that they can take preemptive measures in order to protect themselves and make good decisions. Because instead of, you know, consumers, if they're educated, falling on the bad side of DFS and falling for scams and other issues, they can actually use it as a very convenient platform in order to manage their personal finance, in order to save, as and Vedavati has mentioned as well, it has a lot of advantages in terms of assisting young consumers, especially to manage their money and involving, you know, good personal money saving habits. Thank you.
Thank you so much, everyone, for answering all these questions. Actually, Vinesh, you lead us perfectly into our first question for the Q&A in the audience. So the question is, with consumer education, do you think consumer advocates need to adjust their approach to suit the younger generation? For example, young consumers will not follow specific consumer organization accounts to see these efforts. And we can just have maybe one or two people answer. Vedavati, do you have maybe an answer there?
Okay, thanks for the question. The question was interesting. I think what we are doing today, right now, is one of the efforts of reaching global youth, I think, because we have a Next Gen Leaders Network. We have planned to reach out many more people. We are we are also planning on expanding different ideas to reach out to young consumers so that it has reached every single young consumer with maybe by the means of one or the other organization. It does not matter which organization it is. So we could always shake hands with all the different organizations all over the world, whichever is influential in whichever region, because our ultimate aim is to educate people, is the consumer welfare and awareness. So obviously going hand in hand with other organizations, going hand in hand with all the young influencers also, we can say, who will promote our ultimate agenda, that is the consumer welfare. So I think today's discussion also, and the Consumers International Next Gen Network also, is one of the efforts, I must say.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
Yeah, if you're thinking about individual advocacy and reaching young consumers in an individual country, I think ultimately the key is to engage young consumers where they interact, where they live, where they communicate with their friends, where they, you know, talk rubbish. And ultimately that's on social media. And, you know, a lot of younger people now, you know, I'm in my mid to late 20s, everyone's on TikTok now. Like, for me, that already seems like a really new technology. And it's, choice has gotten involved in that. So we now have a TikTok account where we post videos about, you know, entertaining things about consumer products, but also really important things about law reforms or assistance. And, you know, I've had to film videos for TikTok, which seems very strange. I even feel too old for it. But I think the key ultimately is, like, look where young people are engaging and congregating. Because if it's in, like, young people don't read newspapers anymore, you know, it has to be really on your phone. It has to be ultimately in some form of video or something like that, something funny. Like, I think the more creative we get as consumer groups engaging young people, the more impact there will be. So I'd consider what medium you use.
Those are great examples. I agree. You definitely need to cater to who you're talking to in order to get the message across. So thank you for those examples. I think we can also ask Vinesh about this as well. What do you think?
Thank you, Sandra. Yes, definitely, because for youth, so we have to take a different approach as well. So I would just wanted to share one of the, you know, initiatives which we thought here at Consumer Council of Fiji would be beneficial, you know, for the question which you have proposed. So what we have done is we have, you know, because it is really important to target youth and, you know, so that they are digitally literate as well in digital finance. So we have actually proposed to develop a national digital financial literacy program so that it is incorporated into the curriculum, especially at a, you know, lower levels in primary school as well in secondary school, so that consumers in or the youths in that particular, at that particular age, they're educated on these particular issues and they are, you know, aware of issues existing in DFS and as well as, you know, how to safely use it. So somewhat along those lines. So that is something which we are currently working on.
Thank you, Vinesh. David, I don't want you to feel excluded in case you want to chime in on this one as well.
I think already a lot of interesting and relevant points have been made. But yeah, I would also say that we need to increase the efforts in how we present, let's say, the consumer movement and consumer welfare to younger people. Because at least in Belgium right now, it's something that, you know, people tend to start and care and think more about when they are more settled down, when they have kids, when they have a house, and they start to look at the bills and start to really look at their budgets. But I think we have a lot of reasons to be able to reach out to younger people as well, because the younger you are, the less money you have, generally speaking. So the more important it is to use the little money you have wisely. And so I think there are a lot of avenues for us to position ourselves and to target young consumers. And maybe also not only looking at mediums, but also looking at subjects, at topics. For instance, when we see that there is something happening like GameStop and a lot of young consumers are in mass buying into, let's say, strange financial products, well, then it's good for us to be able to jump on those things as well straight away. Look at where discussions are happening, either on social media or in traditional media, and straight away provide our view on what's happening and how young people can engage with this in a safe way or can protect themselves from the dangers. So those are just a few more thoughts.
Thank you so much. So I know throughout the session, we've covered a lot of areas we've talked about that have matched the sessions throughout the week. So we've talked about financial inclusion, we've talked about safety, data protection, and today's sessions are all about sustainability. So in terms of sustainability and ethical finance, how are young consumers understanding finance and the choices that they make, and how do they manage their and invest their money? Related to sustainability and ethical investment. Maybe I'll start here with Patrick, if you had an answer on that.
Yeah, I think that's sustainability is a driving factor for young people in Australia. Australia is one of the biggest contributors to climate change and global warming in the world. And the vast majority of young people are repelled by that idea and they want to invest money that's ethical. excuse me, if there's a storm in the background in Sydney. I don't know if you can get picked up in the mic, but young people want to invest in products that are ethical and really put their money where their mouth is. I think sometimes there's issues though, because the definition of what satisfies as ethical money is often very tricky. When you look into it, if you further chain, sometimes something just defined and marketed as ethical, in fact, you know, has fossil fuels at the back of the chain, or this, you know, it's really hard to follow that track. So I think there needs to be kind of clear guidelines for consumers around what is ethical investment. And I think there's also issues around sustainability and Bitcoin as well. The amount of energy expended in mining Bitcoin is a big issue. And I think that's going to be more and more prevalent as usage increases. But yeah, it's front of mind. It's a fundamental generational shift where people in their teens and 20s care incredibly deeply in Australia about climate change. And it's the number one issue that people are concerned about. And, you know, young people have been spearheading this revolution. They've been front and center. It's because their livelihoods and their children's livelihoods will be affected.
Thank you so much. No, definitely great to have young consumers that are focused and investing in towards sustainable and ethical ways. Vinesh, did you have something to add on this?
Actually, Petri just mentioned, you know, what I had in mind towards sustainability and ethical. So just wanted to add one more thing, relate a little bit to it. So I think we also need to build, you know, in order for sustainability in DFS, we also need to build trust in it. That's, I think, one of these issues specific to small island developing states. So if they have trust in it, so they'll be sustainable in the use of it in terms of protection as well as ethically using it. That's it, yeah, Sandra.
Thank you so much. So we had another question here from Felicia. So she said, apart from protection from fraudulent and predatory loans, how can regulators and other stakeholders ensure that young people are not over indebted? Maybe I'll have David start off here to answer this question.
Mm-hmm. Well, this of course highly depends on the regulation that is already in place in the country. Excuse me, or the market where you're present. But I think one of the key things is to ensure that the laws that are being passed force financial institutions, banks, or all the entities that are proposing loans, so even companies as well, to comply with a strict set of criteria. And those criteria could be reinforced for people who are maybe above 18 but under 25 or under 30, and who might be in a more vulnerable, fragile place financially than their, let's say, older peers. So I think that's a key thing. For instance, I can speak from my experience. I just changed banks recently, and I switched to the bank that is hailed in Belgium as the one with the best app, and that has the best digital services. And it's true that it's very slick and it works well. But for instance, I can already I can subscribe to 10 different kinds of insurance in like 15 seconds. And there is no single interaction with a human being, with an insurance broker, with a banker who would be able to sit me down to actually explain, okay, you're signing this or that. No, here I just click a few buttons. And of course, yeah, then I get like 20 pages of the contracts, which I might read a little bit, but so other people might not. And even I just read it like 2 minutes. And so there's a lot of new ways for people to get indebted. And I think, yeah, the approach by regulators needs to be holistic to ensure that there's extra protections for young people.
You bring up a great point. As we're getting more digitally advanced and everything is so much easier, so much quicker, but that brings a lot more risks, because easily you can get trapped in signing up for all of those insurance that you don't need. So Vedavadi, did you have anything to add on this point?
Okay, so I think David made the point actually very much clear. So because he elaborated it so well. So I don't think I might have many of the points or anything. I just think that while thinking about regulations on the stakeholders or as a regulator, I think the regulations should be made a bit separately from what, keeping in mind the age group that David mentioned, that 18 to 25, which are adults but not adults, which are investors but also earning and struggling and everything. So I think separate regulations should be made for this particular age group, and there should be some separate regulations for the other age group, let's say. So which might be a heavy task to do actually for the regulators. But I think this might provide a little bit help for what the goal is. So yeah, I think David elaborated it very, very clearly.
Thank you, Garavati. Thank you everybody for answering these questions so thoroughly. We're gonna go to one last question, where we're kind of gonna do a quick fire method, just what is top of mind for you. So in 30 seconds, what is your main hope for the future of digital financial services for young people? So I'll start off here with Vinesh.
Thank you, Sandra. So I believe that, young people, they have the actually power to actually transform the way we transact in the future, the way we actually make purchases and trade as well. But we need to do this responsibly. We need to educate our youth as well, so that they are capable of making very informed decisions on digital financial platforms.
Thanks so much. Very well said. David?
Mm-hmm. My hope is that these new technologies are going to bring, safe and sustainable opportunities to many people who were excluded from these opportunities before. And I think, the way we spend and invest our money is basically one of the key drivers for change in the world, for sustainability, to alleviate poverty, for many good causes. So I hope that all these new technologies will be forces for good, and that young consumers will play a big role in that. That's all I'm going to say.
Great. Vedavadi?
Yes. So my hope for the future would be all the systems and regulations and everything go from complex to simpler, for young consumers to be more involved, more interested, basically as a mindset in the digital finance. Thanks.
And we'll just end off with Patrick here.
Great. My hope is that these products improve the well-being of consumers, young consumers, and in particular, allow people to live fulfilling, debt-free, happy lives, that they serve consumers and they don't serve big financial institutions.
Thank you all so much. I mean, this is a really hopeful way to end off the conversation. I think that as the next generation, you all are influencing the future of consumer protection and the future of digital finance and how it forms going forward. So your hopes are definitely hopefully going to be addressed in the regulations and in the policies that are going forward. I think it's really great to have you all as the next generation leaders, because you all are here representing on the panel, as well as in your consumer advocacy organizations in your own regions and countries. So you're able to influence policy from that angle and influence the policymakers that are making these decisions. So I think this was such an important session to have, in order to get the views of the young consumers and those that are literate and financially literate, as well as aware of all of these consumer protection angles, and able to spread the word to their peers, as well as to the policymakers. So I think we touched on so much during this session. We really brought together the whole week of sessions focusing on inclusivity, safety, data protection, sustainability, and we touched on a lot of the topics and news stories that are top of mind. We touched on cryptocurrency, buy now, pay later. We talked about sustainable finance and data protection. So I really think that we covered a lot during this session, and it gives me a lot of hope about the next generation, because we have these great leaders that are going to drive this forward. So thank you so much, everybody, for joining. And I hope you enjoyed this session as much as I did. This session will be recorded, so you can go back and watch it later.